Okay, let's get started. This is week five. The single quickest way to make money in real estate. This is the secret to making over $2,349.34 in the next 23 days with less than $7 in the bank. I recently developed this technique and it's a real cash cow. I'm not exaggerating when I say that you will be able to go out and make several thousand dollars in a matter of days using the secret. I recently taught the system to a room full of about 60 students. By the end of the day, they put together 98 deals using just this technique that I invented. Me and Joe had a buying event a few weeks ago, and this is what we had done. Now, nobody anywhere is teaching this, probably because I've invented it. I haven't heard about it being used anywhere. It's a cash cow, a real cash cow. This process is amazing, and after this, you're going to know exactly how to create income immediately. Now, on a quick side note, at that event that I was talking about, there was a student there that was sleeping in their car. They were in real cash crunch. They didn't have money, and they just needed to go out and be able to make money. They had no money at the time. They went out using this technique and made $3,000 real quick, just putting a deal together, and they're in a completely different situation. And that is truly the reason why I'm doing this. It's a great situation, a great feeling, and it's great to be around that. So that's the overview of this kind of secret that we're going to talk about, the way to make this happen. Now, I want to talk about a few things. First of all, what we're looking at, there's a few different ways of making money in real estate, different techniques, different ideas, different systems that you can implement that are being taught out there. There's different ways of making money in real estate. There's countless different ways of actually making this happen. Now, sometimes I hear from people, how is this different from what I've heard before? I've heard some of this information before. And that, on some level, I haven't taken every course out there, or many courses actually, so I don't know that to be the case. But I do know the people that I deal with, other there's gurus that we'll do an event with or a joint venture with, and a lot of them ask about these strategies and techniques, and they ask, how we're doing and how we're getting away with this stuff. What are we doing? What are we teaching? Because a lot of the stuff we're talking about is very unique. It's not unique in the aspect of how of the actual deals and how you're bringing it together. Or it's not unique in the aspect of the terms and the terminology and the types of deals we're doing. But it's very unique in the way that you're bringing these things together. Now, the first thing I ask anybody who's gone through any training or anything like that, I ask them, how many deals are they doing? So if you've gone through other information, you've heard information that you think might be something like what I'm going to talk about or what I teach you, and then they ask, how's this any different? I say, I don't know what they teach, so I can't tell you it's different. I only know what works. So how many deals are you doing? How much money are you actually making from going through this process? And that's really the key to this. How much money are you making? How many people are you helping? How many of those ideas that you constantly hear are you implementing? Now, this idea does take work. This idea is not—it's not the simplest idea. You're going to be making calls. You're going to be—you're getting your hands dirty here, getting right into the process. But it's a very quick way to make money. And I'm going to start by talking about that right now. The first thing I've talked about finding buyers, different ways of finding buyers. But the cheapest way to get buyers is just to put out a sign. That's a very cheap way, and you can get that done immediately. If you're just starting out, you have no context, no email list, nothing. You just put out a sign. You can move in today. Now, once you get a call from the buyer, once you get buyers calling you, whether it's an ad or you place a sign, and you get calls from buyers, at this point, you want to find out the conversations we've already talked about. You want to find out how much money they have, what is their ideal home. So you find out how much money they have for a down payment, what is their ideal home, and also what they want to afford a month. Okay, now if the other issues we talked about, finding out if they have credit, if they can get approved, that's a separate story. But first, you find out how much money they have, and if how much how much money they're willing to put into their dream home, and how much money they can afford every month. Now, once you get that information, once you know from your buyer how much money they have to put down, $3,000 to $5,000 at least, and their ideal home, and you know how much they want to pay a month, you've got the recipe now to go out and make money immediately, because you know exactly what you need to do to get a paycheck. This is much better than a job, because they're telling you exactly what you have to do to go out and make money immediately. You find them this, you help them get into a home like this, and they've told you, I'm willing to pay X amount to make this happen. Now, sometimes they may not be completely honest, but that's not going to happen very often if you structure the deals like we'll talk about. But you have found out exactly what you need to do. That this recipe is it's priceless to know exactly what now you know exactly what you have to do to make money and to go out and get a check of $3,000 to $5,000. So what you do immediately, once you get a buyer, and like I said, the cheapest way to get buyers is to put out a sign. You can do this tonight. Go out and put a sign up any area, put them up. We've talked about how to effective ways of getting those calls, but getting calls either from an ad or signs, and you find out exactly what the buyer wants and how much money they have. Now you turn, and the quickest way to get them into a property, if you don't have properties right now or your investors don't, is go right to the rent-to-rent section, either the rent or the rent-to-buy section. Rent is normally going to be better. You go to the for-rent section of your newspaper, and what you're going to do is you're going to call these people up, and you're going to ask them if they'll do a rent-to-buy. Now let's look. We've talked about the value of the buyers. They're able to get into a home. Even if they can't qualify, they can get the mortgage done. But now you're calling a landlord, somebody who's advertising to rent their property out, and asking them if they'll do a rent to buy. Now, on average, between 1 in 3 to 1 in 4, usually those are pretty conservative numbers, of the landlords you call are going to want to do this, are going to accept your offer to do a rent to buy for them. You're going to do a lease option for them. You're going to bring them a tenant with the down payment. They're going to get into the property, and they're going to start making the payments to the landlord on a rent to buy. Now, they're going to agree to refinance that within 12, 18, maybe 24 months. And then they're going to get that information. There's different scripts and different ways to get this done, which you guys will get. But the basic way to start the conversation, I was just asking, you know, I'm calling, I saw the sign for rent. And I like to get right to the point. You know, you don't want to beat around the bush and act as if you're calling to rent the property yourself. You can just ask them about the home. Say, I want to do a rent to buy. Hey, would you be open to a rent to buy? They say, well, yes or no. If they say yes or no, if they say no, you ask them, you know, why not? I think, you know, is there a certain reason? Are you wanting to hold on to the property? Because the only reason, let's go over the benefits here to the landlord before we get into the conversation. The only reason that a landlord would not do this is if they want to hold on to the property for a very long period of time. We're looking at, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 years. Because your lease options can go out for 5 years. You can lease option a property for 5 years. So the only reason a landlord would not do this is if they plan on holding onto the property for a while. Now, in some areas of the country, some college areas or different higher-end income areas, the people are not going to – they enjoy being a landlord because they can rent it out to quality people. But a lot of people, more often than not, most of these people are willing to walk away from the landlord hassles if you can show them a way to do that. And the way you do that is doing a lease option, finding them a lease option tenant, and getting them into the property. Now, like I said – usually one out of every 3 to 4 people are going to agree to this. So once you have your buyer, you talk to them, you go right to the area the buyer wants, find the property closest to their criteria in the for rent section. Also, you have the buyer, you do the 7 to 10 day deadline, tell them you can get them into a home, have them go out and find the leads. But you call the buyer up, or you call the renter up in whatever area of the paper or whatever area of town they want to get into, and you ask if they'll do a rent to buy. You explain how the rent to buy works. Basically, you have you're going to find a qualified tenant, a qualified buyer, for that property, a lease option tenant, not just a renter tenant, a qualified buyer for the property that's going to get into that home, and they're going to start making the monthly payments. Now, there's different ways to structure this, because the lease agreement, the biggest objection that you'll have is, you know, if they want to keep the properties, if they want to use their own lease agreement, or they want to put their own deal together, that's fine. The landlord can have their attorney or do the paperwork however they want to get that done. And I'll talk more about bringing all the paperwork together, but what you have to understand is the concept of what you're doing. So you're calling the landlord up. Right now they're renting the property out, so they're getting X amount of income, but they're also a landlord, so part of that income goes towards maintenance and other problems, vacancies that they may have. Excuse me. So you call your landlord up. You call the landlord is still dealing with rental property now. They're wanting to rent the property, so they're getting income on the property. What you're giving them is that same income or better, depending on how you structure the lease option, with a tenant that is serious, a lease option tenant, not just a renter tenant, it's a buyer, someone who's actually getting in the property and buying the home. Their mentality is a lot different when they're buying the home, because they know that they're buying the home. So if there's a problem with the home, they're not going to call the landlord up, because the landlord doesn't have those landlord hassles. They're not the traditional landlord. The way that they're going to be is basically as a mortgage company. So when the buyer and the property that you find makes those payments, if there's a problem with the property, they fix it immediately. Then they refinance the property for the full market value. Now, in some areas, the landlord wouldn't want to sell the property at the full market value today in 12 to 18 months. That's not a problem. You can get a mutually agreed upon appraisal at that time. Because when that tenant goes to refinance, they've already lived in the home. They've taken care of it. They've had the upkeep, and they've been making payments on it on time. If they can show that they've been doing that, they're much more likely to go out and get a mortgage on that home. So they go out and they get a mortgage on this home that the landlord has, that was originally a landlord, he was renting the property out. And 12 to 18 months, they go and get a mortgage on that home, and they pay the landlord the full market value of the home. Does that make sense? So now they pay the landlord the full market value in 12, 18, 24 months. They pay that landlord for that home. Now, the landlord gets a full market, full asking price. What you're going to charge is a down payment that tenant pays you. So if the $3,000 to $5,000, that's what you're going to charge to get all this set up. And what's going to happen now, if the person who owns this property, the owner of the property or the landlord, the only way they're going to get that full market value, aside from doing a lease option like this, they could do it on their own if they wanted to, but if they knew how to do that or they could do that, they would be doing that by now. They wouldn't be renting the property out. The only other way that they're going to get the full market value is if they do it for sale by owner. Now, I've covered those numbers. They're not very optimistic, but that's the only way they're going to get their full market value, because otherwise they list it with a realtor. And they'd have to take that dis you know, they'd pay the commissions on top of that closing cost. Even when they sold it for sale by owner, they'd have closing costs. So at that time, you're giving them the full asking price, the full market value of the home. You're just not able to do it right now. You're giving it to them later on down the road. Now, I've sent almost everybody has that the script of how to go through those calls, but it's a little different than going through a regular seller, because when you call them up, you're just asking them, what you do a rent to buy. Yes or no. If they say no, and you can go real quickly through these calls, they say no. Is there a reason why? Because I think I can get you the full market value. It would just take me some time to do that. If they're definitely not interested, they're not interested, they want to be a landlord, they want that income, you can move on. Except, you want to mention this one last thing when you deal with a landlord, and this is a very, very important pressure point here. If they're interested in income, if you can ask them, is it so income is what you want? Are you looking for more income properties? Because as I explained, I'm an investor. I work with other people. I work with investors, and I deal with buyers and sellers all day long. So if there's other, are you interested in income property? Because if you are, I can put you, I could send you what I've got available and see if there's any properties that fit your criteria, and then you get them on your list of investors. So even if these people don't want to do this, you could still make the call worth your time and their time by explaining that you have other income properties that you can provide them with. And at that point, you get all their contact information, their email. I'll get more into dealing with investors in a later week. And so what you're going to do is get their contact information now. So this landlord who wants the income property, if they want income properties, you can ask them. If they don't want to do a rent to buy, you can ask them, what's your criteria for your income properties? How much are you trying to make a month? What kind of areas? What kind of equity? What are you looking for? And then you get their information from that landlord of what they want. So now you can turn them into an investor on your investor list and send them out other income properties as they become available. You put them on your list. Okay? So that's if they say no. Now, when they say yes, they want to ask any questions about it. You say, well, I want to do a rent to buy with your home. I've got buyers that I want to get in there, rent to buy buyers that I qualify, get some qualified buyers in there. Is that something that you'd want to do? Now, immediately they'll ask more questions about the rent-to-buy process, which you have to understand the lease option process before you can explain it. The way the lease option is going to work is a down payment's going to be paid to you, then the buyer's going to move in at an agreed-upon purchase price, or the purchase price on the lease option may just be a mutually agreed-upon appraisal at that time. It has to be mutually agreed upon, so the appraisal has to come in, and both parties, the buyer and the owner, have to agree, the lease option tenant and the landlord have to agree that that is an accurate value before they get a loan. And realize that there's not going to be, the numbers aren't going to be way off here, because whatever happens, your lease option tenant has to go and get an appraisal with their lender when they deal with their lender. And you're going to be, your involvement here is going to be minimal after you get the down payment. You will be involved with the building the credit and explaining, getting the lease option tenant in touch with the lender and letting the seller know what's going on with this whole situation. And we'll explain how, if there's a problem there, how you want to handle that. But the ideal situation is where nothing, where you're basically the lease option tenant makes the payments, and then they work with their lender to get pre-approved, a contingent pre-approval if they do this, this, and this. So they go through, they make the payments, and then in 12 to 18 months, they refinance it and pay it off. So when they do that, the appraisal is going to have to come in from the lender. So the numbers aren't going to be very far off. The seller's not going to be able to raise the price, inflated to an unbelievable amount, because the buyer has to agree to it, number one. Number two, the lender's appraiser has to agree to it as well. So the lease option, that's in a nutshell, the lease option process works. They're going to pay you a down payment, get in, make monthly payments, then those monthly payments are going to go against the purchase price, which that's negotiable. We can explain, I'll explain how to do that. You can set that up a series of different ways. You can just charge that monthly payment as a fee, or it can come off of a purchase price. But whatever your purchase price is that your landlord needs, you can work backwards and raise, move the price, raise or lower that price accordingly, as long as everybody's happy. The monthly payments go towards something, or they go towards a fee, or they're just interest only, or whatever it is, and then it's refinanced for that mortgage amount. Okay, so you find the buyers, call the four rents, and get them into a property there. Now, this isn't, some people don't like making calls like this. That's, if you don't want to do that, that's going to limit what you're able to do as far as making money immediately. You're not going to get equity here. You're not looking for equity, and you're not going to get monthly income. So you're going to make quick, immediate cash. And if you implement this process, normally you're gonna even if the properties you find do not fit your buyer's criteria, even if they don't, you've still got a property now, and you know how easy buyers are to find. You can go find a lease option buyer for that property. Does that make sense? So the buyer comes in, does a lease option for a property that you find from the rent to own. Now the reason this process is so amazing is because it's so simple and easy to implement is because it doesn't cost you anything. You have like the cost of a sign, which is $1.30. You can go put a sign up, and if it doesn't work, you can move it. I mean, if you're on a very, very tight budget, this is the best way to make this happen. And the for rent, that is free. You can get a paper at a Starbucks and go and make those calls immediately. So it's a very low cost, practically free method to get this process started and get these calls coming in, go find the for rent, and get that situated. Now, the way that you deal with the for rent people, when you're calling the for rent people, like I said, you explain to them, I want to do a rent to buy. I've got a list of rent to buy candidates, you know, lease option tenants that want to do a rent to buy. Now, I've got a list of these people. I want to go and try to move your property to them. Now, if that happens, I'm going to take the down payment. Now, if you deal with investors who own several properties or some other landlords, they'll say, well, I want the security deposit and the fee. The way to explain that is that you're getting your minimum. You have to make a minimum on the deal, and you're finding the tenant. The security deposit, they're going to have to give back to the tenant anyway, in many cases. In some cases, not, depending on the area, if they tear the place up. And what they're trying to do is qualify that tenant, which is what you're doing. So the first month's rent you could still include in that down payment or add that to the down payment, but you want to explain to these landlords that you normally do not want to come up with the money. You do not want to pay them out of what you get, because what you're getting is just a small piece of the pie. You're getting the down payment. You're giving them everything, the income and the equity. So when that comes up, you know, well, if a seller says to you, well, I've got the security deposit and the first month's rent, you know, those fees that I want to get as a down payment, you can simply explain to them, you know, what I'm doing here is I'm taking the down payment as my profit. So it doesn't make sense for me to give you a large portion of that when I'm finding the tenant, qualifying them, and getting everything squared away for this for your property and going through that process, closing the deal, making it happen for your home. Now, in some cases, it does make sense to pay the landlord up front. And you can, if you do that, you always want to set the expectations for that relationship immediately. So if and when you do that, and this is the way to decide if that's going to happen. If it's a deal breaker and they have other properties, that's when you want to look at that. And you could say, look, here's the situation. I will, you know, we can work out a split on this first deal, but the only reason I'm doing this is for the sake of the relationship, so we can close other deals in the future. Normally, we won't be doing this. And, you know, it doesn't make sense for me, because your minimum has to be, because just the marketing, the cost of your time, you need to make at least $3,000 up front on each deal. And you can negotiate that sometimes if you're working with somebody else on a joint venture. That's, you know, with other investors. But on these deals, you don't want to, because when you come up, if somebody comes up with $3,000 to $5,000 and you pay out $2,500 or how much ever it is, you've basically taken a paycheck and you split it up, and you're not making money in the process, and you're not really helping the seller out any by giving them that money, because what they're charging that money for is to qualify the tenant. But you're already going through that process. You're qualifying the tenant by making sure that they understand they're buying the home. And we have that buyer questionnaire in the book there. You can look at they're buying the home. Explain that they're buying the home, that they're going to be in there making payments. There's no landlord. There's the landlord, the owner is treated just like the mortgage company. They understand that they're going to be making payments. The whole idea here is to get refinanced, to get a mortgage and pay off the property. So by putting this tenant in there, putting this lease option tenant in there and making sure they're serious for that landlord, that is a huge service that you're doing them. You're doing them giving them a lot of value by that. So you don't need to come in with a security deposit the first month's rent. That those are normally things you don't want to pay. Now you do, and if you do, you want to explain the only reason I'm doing this is for the sake of the relationship and deals we'll do in the future. This isn't something I normally do. You want to explain that to them. Okay. Now, when you talk about the process of the lease option as far as qualifying, the landlords may ask, you know, well, how do I know these people are qualified? You can ask them, well, what would make you feel more comfortable? And, you know, put the ball in their court. Well, what do they want to do? Do they want to pull their credit? Do they want to talk to them? Do they want to take them out to lunch? What do they want to do? They probably don't want to take them out to lunch, but they want to meet them, maybe, in some cases. That won't be a problem. You can tell them, you do whatever you want to do. I want you to be completely comfortable with whoever I find to get into your property. Now, once you do that, once you explain to them that they can use whatever criteria they want, and that you're just basically going to start to find them a rent to buy, you also want to explain in this conversation that, you know, what I can do is I can move this property because I've got buyers ready to go, and if I don't now, I should have some. You know, I've got come across buyers constantly ready to go into your property. Now, if If one of my buyers, if it works for him, great. If not, I can try and move your property on a rent to buy. If this will work for you, if we'll make monthly payments and pay off your mortgage, so basically you'll get full market value, not right now. If that'll work for you, what I'll do is I've got a one-page letter of intent that explains this whole process. I can fax that over to you and then walk you through it. And once you sign off on that, I can get everything started. And in the meantime, and you explain this on the conversation, in the meantime, you can do whatever you want. You can rent it out, refinance it, list it with the realtor, do whatever. You're not going to be tied up at all. You're just allowing me to, try to help you out here and get a lease option tenant in that property. By stating it like that, by saying, you can do whatever you want, sell it, lease option it, or sell it, rent it out, refinance it, whatever, you're the automatic, they have an automatic defense mechanism that comes a lot of people you're going to deal with because they think you want to tie their property up, get an option on it. They can't do anything with it. They're bonded to work with you. You don't want to do that. The best way to provide people the value is to only get paid when you provide value. You don't want to tie their property up so they can't rent it, show it, or do anything with it. You want them to be able to do whatever they want with it in the meantime. Okay. Now that may seem a little silly compared to what, other people, a lot of techniques of doing this are talking about, tying up any properties, immediately getting it, and buy, getting the seller to commit to you. But that doesn't make sense, especially if you don't know what you're doing. And that's, when you're starting out, a lot of times you don't. So you don't want a seller to commit to you where they have to make a monthly payment. Now it's going to cost them money, time, possibly their credit, just to see if you know what you're doing or just to see if you can do it. You don't want to do that. And the more important thing here is the concept, the system. That's the more important part here, is a system. And anything we do, you want to get a system. The system is not contingent upon any one deal. The system is not contingent upon somebody waiting for you to make things happen. The system is contingent upon the same results over and over again happening, helping people, making sure they benefit and making money at the same time. And the system here is what's important. So once they agree to that, once you basically on the call, you say, well, I've got a one-page letter of intent. I can fax that over to you, walk you through it, and in the meantime, you can do whatever you want with the property. You get their fax number, you send them the fax, and now an important process here is whenever you're sending somebody something, you want to set the appointment for the next call right there. You don't want to say, well, why don't you send this over, we'll talk tonight or tomorrow. You want to say, why don't I send this to you, and we'll talk. What's better for you, 7 or 8? And the best way to do that is to give them a choice, just like that. What is better for you, 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock? Instead of giving the option, give the choice. The option of if it's when, instead of, well, can we talk tonight or tomorrow? You want to say, would 7 be better for you or 8? And one of two things will happen. Either they'll say a time will work for them, or they'll say, they'll be tied up tonight. Whatever happens, you set another time. Say, okay, what about tomorrow at 1 or 3? Get a definite time. You want to get an appointment set. That's going to do a few things. Number one, it's going to put some accountability on your end as well. You got to get in touch with them, and on their end, more importantly, that they know you need to talk at 1 to 3. Because some of these people, if people you deal with are not serious, you're not going to be able to help them. And you need to know that they're serious, and this qualifies them on some level, excuse me. A lot of times when you talk to people, some of the calls I made earlier this week, they'll call you back if they can't make it, and they'll say, well, can we reschedule it? That's not a problem. You can reschedule it all day long as you make it, you don't want to keep drag that on for days or weeks. But then you know that they're thinking about it, that they're serious, that they called you, and they had enough respect in the process, or they're interested enough to where they want to look at another date and reschedule it, call you back and let you know that time won't work, but here's a time that will work. Okay, so whenever you send anything or whenever you're setting the second call for anybody, you want to set a time and day. Tonight at 7 or 8 be better, or tomorrow at 1 or 3. Always set a time, and then that time is what you use. And then you repeat that time back to them right when you're sending them information. You can say, well, I'll send you this over, I'll send you the fax over, and then I'll talk to you at 7 o'clock. Okay, now, that, a lot of times, students have problems with getting in touch with sellers residually after the first call, and that's one way to handle that. Now, when you send that over to them, what you're going to use is that letter of intent, and there's also a lease agreement memo there. It's both basically the same thing and the main book that you have there. When you use that letter of intent, all that is, if you've read it, is a very, very watered-down commitment. If somebody has to show that to their lawyer, they're not using their head, because it's all in very plain English, explains exactly what you're going to do. You're going to try to pay off their mortgage, or in this case, you pay off their balance, just pay off whatever amount that they want to sell it at, and the monthly payments that you're going to give them. Those are the only two fields to fill in there, aside from the signature at the end. Okay, so you use that lease agreement, or you use the letter of intent, send that over to them, have them sign that, and fax that back to you. Right there it says all you're going to do is try to find them a lease option tenant, and in the lease agreement memo there explains how you have access to the property. You have to get a lock box, and you want to put a sign in the yard, or you want to have you want to be able to do these things. You don't necessarily have to, but you're going to try to do these things. And then you're going to go, and once you get that letter of intent back, you're going to go to your buyers and try to get them into one of those. See what buyer, what property, what buyers are looking for those type of properties that you have there that rent. Just by calling the for rent people, you're able to get those homes. Because once they sign that and send that back to you can immediately start marketing that property. So even if you just go out and you made 10 calls, which is one of the first assignments there, to make 10 calls for rent, you will have a couple deals. Almost, I don't think anybody's gone through 10 conversations and not had at least a couple deals out of that. No, normally, like I said, one out of every three or four conversations you have, even if you have them, somewhat correctly, they're going to agree to this process. They're going to want to work with you and get a rent-to-buy tenant in the property. Okay? Now, once you get that, now you've got properties. You have immediate properties now. You can move. You can market. You can either put signs in the yard, if not in the area. You can get the now, like I said, you find your buyers first, and you find a property that fits their criteria. If that property doesn't fit their criteria, or if you find your property first, that's not a problem. We can reverse engineer the process, and you can find a buyer for that property now. Does that make sense? You can find a buyer for the property now. So now you've got the property, you can find your buyer. The cheapest way, like I said, to get buyers is to put the sign up. Now there's other ways to find buyers and sellers, other ways to work this, but this process right now, there's a few the whole con the condition on this whole process here is that you have no money at all. You have very little money. You have very little money, and you want to get started immediately and make money. And this is the quickest way to do that. The absolute quickest way to do that. There's no quicker way to make money in real estate than doing this. And I challenge anybody to find a quicker way than doing this, because I've done this in less than hours and got a check within hours. And I've talked about it on the site there. And I'm not bragging. I hate talking like that. I'm not bragging. I'm not bringing that up. I am saying that I've shown other people, and I've shown other people do the same exact thing. Actually, I'm doing an interview in a couple of days with somebody who's made $12,000 in the first 42 days just doing this, not spending a penny on advertising outside of the signs and using the same sign. Actually, he was very using a cash crunch. He would pick up the sign and take it to another area after he filled up a place. He'd take the sign into another area. This process does work if you actually implement it and you make it happen. You're calling the for rent people. Once they get that letter of intent, you go and you find your buyer if you don't already have the buyers. So you can go back and forth. It doesn't matter. Remember, you want to be versatile. I don't know if you've ever studied anything about Bruce Lee, but one of the reasons he was so effective as a martial artist was he said he should be like water, be able to adapt to any situation. He said, you could be great, a great sword fighter, but if you're in a phone booth, or I think he was a staff fighter, some analogy, but if you're in a phone booth, you're going to get killed. And he said you need to be able to adapt and be able to be very fluid in your movement and have the rule is there's no rules. And that's how you want to treat your real estate business. Not that you want to get in a combative situation with your tenants or your buyers, but you want to be able to create a situation where anybody that calls you, anytime anybody calls you, can make money. And that's actually what we're going to be talking about on the next call tomorrow at 4, is how to make money with every single call you get. You want to be ver you want to have an arsenal of different techniques you can implement. So when a buyer calls you and they want a property, you know exactly what you have to do to go get that property, get them into a property immediately. Now you can tell them what to do, and you can have other processes as well. But immediately, if a buyer calls you right now and you've never done any of this, you've never done anything in real estate, you can get them into a property. That is a powerful statement. You can start today, and you can get any buyer that calls you into a property. Just about. Now, there's some situations where you won't be able to do that, but almost always you'll be able to get them into a property. If nothing else, you'll have properties to show them. You'll have something to show them, which shows that you're actually finding properties based on their criteria. Does that make sense? So now, not only do you have, like I said, you have buyers calling you, find the home firm or the for rent section. You have for rent, and when you call the for rent, if you just had 10 conversations and you got out, you had four or five people agree to that, sign off, yeah, go ahead and try to lease option my property. Now you could work backwards and find buyers for them. You put signs in that area. Like I said, this is not the only way to do this. I keep repeating this is the cheap way to do this. If you have a tight budget, cheapest way to get the buyers for any area is just put a sign in that area. Once they call you, you get to get them in the property. There will already be a lock box on property. There'll already be that in place. If it's not, you need to get access to the property. And now, what you're going to do is you're going to assign them your right on the property, a lease option. You're going to set up a lease option. The down payment is going to come to you. Okay, now how to set this up as far as being the principal in the transaction is relatively easy. Basically, what we're looking at is you're taking, because you're not representing anybody. What you're doing is you're assigning your interest in the property. And that's an important distinction there. And I'll be talking more about that next week or next call. But you're not representing anybody. What you're doing is you're taking your interest in a property and you are assigning it. Does that make sense? Okay, so the last thing I want to talk about, basically, it's bringing this whole process together. So you have buyers calling. When you have buyers calling, you're going to the for rent section of your paper. Now the rent to buy section will work too, but rent to buy normally they're asking for money down. So if that happens, you want to explain that you're going to split the down payment. Or if it's a $500 or $1,000, you ask for $3,000 to $5,000 down. You still want a net $3,000. Anytime you give the seller money, anytime you give that landlord money, you want to make sure that it's explained that it's only for the sake of the relationship. Okay? So you want to explain it's only for the sake of the relationship so you can go out and be able to do these deals again and again. Now, once you put money in their pocket, I want to explain this too. Once you have a landlord that has other properties, you get them a quality tenant and you put money in their pocket, they're going to be much, much more likely to work with you. They're going to want to work with you in the future. They've also normally have other, they're part of a landlord association or whatnot. You can find a whole list of properties immediately that you can move to rent to buy people. Okay, so you just want to get the whole key is just get that one deal done, get that check cut to you, and make that happen. Because once you have that happen, they're going to be lining up, ready to go again and again. Okay, now I'm sure there's some questions. Well, based on the way these are going, maybe there's not. So I'm going to open up the call here and see if there's any questions about this. Basically, you're calling the buyers and dealing with the foreign people, and we've talked about this with I don't know if a lot of you and I have talked about this in on our coaching calls, but this is a very effective way to find them buyers. Now it takes time, but it doesn't cost any money and get started immediately. So I'm going to open up the call right now and take any questions here. We there?
Yes.
Yes, okay, great. Is anybody new on the call? If you could just say your name and where you're from on the call, just introduce yourself, please.
This is Chris from Indianapolis.
Chris from Indianapolis, great. Anybody else on?
Jared from Portland.
Jared from Portland, great. Glad to
Mary
have you.
from California.
Mary from California, okay. Anybody else on?
And you got Alex from Virginia.
Alex from Virginia, great. Yeah, Alex, you had a question here, and that's what I'm going to cover in a second. I knew that Alex had that question earlier, and I want to point that out. Alex, do you mind repeating what you had sent me about the eviction?
Yeah, I asked you if when you're putting people into these rent-to-buys, and a lot of them are poor credit people, what was the percentage of them that fail to make the rent payment and then have to be evicted? And does that cause problems with those landlords
Right.
for you?
Okay. I'm getting some feedback on the line. I'm going to kind of go back into conference mode for a second. Okay, Alex's question was, what happens is these people have poor credit. They get into a home, and what if they don't make the payments, so the landlord has to evict them? What's going to happen here is when you get a tenant into your property, or you get a tenant in one of these properties, you're explaining to the landlord the most important thing here is that you set the expectations for any relationship from the beginning. So from the first call, you're telling the landlord what you're doing. You're finding the lease option tenant, getting them into the property, and going from there. They're going to have the income, they're going to have the property, they're going to have the equity, they're going to have a buyer in place into that property. Now, if something happens, now what's the numbers are, which aren't very optimistic, about 50 to 60% of lease option tenants do not stick around, do not exercise their option. They normally take off. Now, the reason that is because those people don't ask for enough money down. The biggest qualifier to your lease option tenants is how much money they put down, because that's how much money they're walking away from. If they do walk away. So the biggest qualifier is to get that money down. So when you get that money down, they're qualified on some level and they understand the process. But still, if they take off, now your landlord has a vacancy on his hands now. He's got a payment that needs to be made. Now this is a landlord who has already rented the property out. So they already had a vacancy when you called them. So now they're really not in any worse situation than they were before. And they've got a payment that needs to be made, but their tenant, the tenant that you gave him, the lease option tenant that you gave him, was exponentially more qualified than any renter that he would have found. So he had somebody in there that was making a payment that's usually rent plus a premium. So he got a premium for this risk, quote unquote, that he's having of these people taking off. So if the people don't fulfill the lease option agreement, he has a vacant property. He's basically in the exact same position he was when you called him. Now, you can explain to anybody you work with, and this is what you always want to say, if there's ever any problem with a tenant, they need to get him out, or they need to do something, I always say, give me a call, and I'll find somebody else to get on your property. And in the meantime, it'll be just like it was the first time we worked together. You can do whatever you want in the meantime. So now this landlord gets that tenant out of the property, or the tenant takes off. That's normally how it's going to happen. They've given up that money. That money that they've given you as a down payment was what they charged you, what you charged. It's a non-refundable lease option fee. It was an assignment. So the seller here, the landlord was okay with that at the beginning because they've got a tenant in there, the same exact tenant they would have had if they rented it out, only somebody who's more qualified. Now they've got a vacancy, they go and find another rental, either sell it, refinance it, or you find them another rent to buy. So essentially it reverts to the back to the very same, the same way that it was structured when you called them, because you didn't take ownership of the property in any way. You did. You kept everything to the seller. You kept the down payment. You turned everything over to the seller. So they still have ownership and they can market it. And it's basically goes back to the exact same situation it was earlier. And that's what they. That's what you got your down payment for. Does that, Alex? You there?
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. And that will happen. That the more what we'll talk about later, and what's more problematic is when you have ownership of the property and your lease option tenant takes off. Because if you have ownership of the property and your lease option tenant takes off, you've got, you know, a few decisions to make there. But you never want to leave your seller hanging there with a payment to make when you explain that you would make that payment. That's why normally this technique is really a good technique. I do with this with even with sellers that don't have, that you know don't that want to sell their property. Just find them a tenant and move on, because you can make quick cash. You get, you know, a better relationship with the seller and the buyer. And you don't have to worry. There's no residual problems there. The worst that's going to happen is they'll call you in the exact same position they were in earlier.
Right.
Does that make sense to everybody?
Yeah.
Okay. Are there any other questions about this?
Azam, I have a question.
Yes, Chris.
What I found was, after people have agreed to me on the phone, after I have explained the benefits to them, and I have sent the lease agreement to them, they don't send it back to me.
Okay.
Okay, they don't fill it up, and, you know, I call them up, I ask them, you know, what happened, you know, is there something I can explain, do you want me to go over the benefits again, and they suddenly, you know, decide that they don't want to do it, or they want to back out, or one person gave me a reason, his wife told him not to do it, you know, one person said he'll have to contact his attorney. I mean, I've been getting all kinds of vague and, you know, totally strange reasons for them not sending it back to me at all.
Okay. Okay.
So what can I do in that situation?
Excuse me. Okay. You're having, with the first call you're having, they're agreeing to it. Is that right?
Yeah.
And then you're setting the appointment for the second call?
Yeah.
And then there's no problem there, right?
No problem there.
So
you even send them, you know, I get their email, I send it to them. And I tell them, okay, you go ahead and read it, you know. And even in the email, I'm, like, specifying once again, look, you don't, I mean, there's no commitment from your side, you know. There's no downside to you. There's only a benefit you can get out of this. Even after doing that, I mean, they just seem to be either, number one, very reluctant to, you know, like, to do it, or they just say, no, we don't want to do it, or something of that nature. But, I mean, it's, I don't know how to explain it. It's, is there something which I could do to, you know, get them to, sign it and send it back to me? I'm not sure.
Yeah, what's happening is that that happens quite frequently sometimes, where people, where sellers aren't, you having trouble getting in touch with these people. Now, what you're calling them, the first conversation's going as described, they agree to it and everything's fine. That's right, right? We're good to go there, right?
Yeah.
And then the second call, or the when you send them the information, you set up the appointment for the second call, and you're able to get in touch with them on that second call, right?
I'm able to get in touch with them, but they're backing out.
Right. So on the second call, what is it? What exactly are they saying? Were they saying, I want to have my lawyer look at it?
Well, they give all kinds of vague reasons, you know.
Okay, so
one guy said his wife told him not to do it. The other guy said he needs to get in touch with his attorney and he doesn't want to sign anything. There seemed to be, like, a fear factor going on out
right.
there.
Right. One way to combat that is you can explain to them, you could say, well, right now, you know, like I said, I can't do anything. And you want to explain that your whole marketing process is halted until they sign that. And all they're doing is the commitment they're making is nothing. I mean, even if you found a rent-to-buy tenant and the seller backed out of the deal, you're not going to take them to court. So really, having them sign that does absolutely nothing as far as ensure that they're committed to you legally. What it does is, in their mind, it's a perception. They have a perceived commitment now. They've talked to you. They read the paperwork that you sent them, and now they've signed it and sent it back to you. Mentally, you know, psychologically, that's a pretty high commitment, much higher than actually legally, because you can't take that document, that, you know, those words there, it leaves it so vague. They can do whatever they want. I think those are the exact words used. You can do whatever you want. You're not going to be able to hold that up in court, and you can explain that to them. But one effective way to get them, when you're talking to them on the second call, You can walk through the paperwork. The way you do it is say, do you have the paperwork in front of you? Okay?
Yeah.
And then you walk them through it. You can say, each paragraph, you know, you can say, now here's what we're saying right here. Here's exactly what I'm saying right here. You can do whatever you want. Sign it. You know, you can sell the property, refinance it, do whatever you want. Then when you get to the end, you can ask them, do you have any questions about this? After you've gone through every word there with them on the phone, it takes, you know, 5 minutes. You ask them, do you have any questions about that? And right there, any questions or objections they have will come up. If they say, well, I want my, you know, if they say, no, I don't have any questions, because tell me, is this the kind of response you're getting? No, it looks good. I just don't, my wife isn't interested in it, or, you know, I want to have my attorney look at it before I sign it. It looks good. If what you're saying works, it looks good, but I want to have somebody else look at it. Is that the tone, the dialect, is that how they're talking?
Yeah.
Well, the way you say is, oh, I understand that. That's fine. What you can do, actually, and what I want to do is I want to make you feel comfortable, but I don't want you or me to lose money in this process either. So what you can do is right there where it says comments, you can write down, you know, contingent upon talking to your Uncle Jack or your lawyer Todd or, okay, you know, Betty down the street. You can put that right there, and what that means is that after you talk to them, If you don't like it, no problem. But by signing it and putting that down there, now I can go and I can market it. I can tell my buyers I have a committed, you know, seller here that, you know, this may or may not work for them. And you can repeat exactly what you said after you go through the whole thing and say, does that all make sense? Do you have any questions? And you could say, I understand that this sounds too good to be true. But if this works the way I explained, is that something that you want to do? And if they say yes, you can say, well, you know, I don't want this to be held up by, you know, something small that can, you know, an insignificant, you know, a concern or something you have. You know, I don't want this to be held up any longer than you do. I don't want anyone dragging their feet here. So what you can do, that whatever, put whatever would make you feel more comfortable in that margin there. I've had people put, you know, I have to talk to my neighbor's wife, you know, and put that in there and then sign it and send it back to you. That's fine. And that seems silly, but by telling them that, you can tell them, put whatever you want in there. You can put, you know, it doesn't mean anything until I talk to my attorney. That's okay. You know, your attorney's going to charge you money to go over the information, and they're not going to explain it to you any better than we just went over right now. It's pretty, you know, understood there. And, you know, or you can just, you know, sign it, and if there's a problem, you know, you can just send it to me tomorrow. And another way, if you don't want them to fax it to you immediately, is you can say, why don't you write that in there right now while I'm talking to you, put in, talk to attorney, must talk to attorney first, and sign it, don't send it to me, keep it, and then you'll be able to talk to your attorney. Now sometimes there's a legitimate concern here. If they want to talk to their wife, or they want to talk to the attorney, that's okay. And the way that you can settle that is you can say, well, why don't you, well, when would be a good time? You know, you can talk to him first, and then we can all talk together. So would 5 or 6 be better for you? And what you want is, say their wife comes home at 5, they talk about it at 5:30 or 5:30, depending on the situation, then you all have a 3-way call that evening. Do you understand?
Yeah.
So that puts accountability that they must talk to that person because you're calling at 6 o'clock, or you're gonna be talking at 6 o'clock. So when somebody says there's anybody else involved, and when anybody gives you that, and you're gonna get that with almost anything, you're not gonna get that all the time, but any type of deal will have something like that. Well, let me talk to so and so. Well, okay, how long? You know, do you think that we could talk to him the next day or so? Because I know that you don't want anyone, and you could say it just like that. I know that you don't, because they don't want anyone dragging their feet on this process. I don't either. What we can do is, you know, you can talk to him by noon tomorrow. Then, you know, all three of us can get on a call at 1 o'clock and, you know, go over any questions you guys have. And at that point, they have to do two things. After they have an appointment, you have an appointment set, and you explain that you want, that you expect for this to be signed, by saying, just sign it right now, just so you know, put that in there that you have to talk to your attorney first. That way, you know, it's a kind of a note to yourself, and it's already signed, and you won't send it over until we talk tomorrow after you've talked to your attorney, or until we all three, you know, I've talked to your wife as well. Does that make sense, Chris?
Yeah.
So the first thing is to walk them through it, ask them, you know, does that make sense? Do you have any questions? So you've gone through every word. Do they have any questions? No. Anything they do have, they can write down and send it over immediately so you can get that started. Now, anything they do. And now if it looks like that's even a problem, say, okay, you know what, don't even do that, just sign it right now, just so I know that you signed it and that you know that it makes sense right there that you're going to talk to so and so, and then set the accountability for the next appointment. Set the next appointment and they're accountable to talk to so and so and get this done. I mean, you truly are trying to help them here, but sometimes people need you need to light a fire under their ears to, you know, get them to, you know, get on this. But you do not want to drag this out for longer than it takes. So
Well, the other thing I've heard is when I called them, they told me that you know, they have their own lease agreement and they don't want to use the one which I sent them. So typically in that case, I did not know how to respond. I mean, he said, no, we are going to use the lease agreement I have written the way I want it.
Oh, that's not a problem. If they want to do that, if they want to, if they want to write down, if they want to use their own lease agreement, that's not a problem. But before you answer any objection that you get, and it doesn't matter what kind of objection you get, and before, whenever there's a question or objection raised, you could say, "So, if we use your lease agreement, would that work for you?" That way, you know that that's the only problem there is, and it's not some deeper problem where you don't think their wife is going to agree to it or they want their attorney to look at it. So, anytime this goes for any objection you get, you can ask them, restate their objections to them. Say, you know, so if we use your own lease agreement, that's it. That's the only hurdle here. We're ready to go. And if he says yes, say, okay, no problem. Use your own lease agreement. And at that point, he can write that down in the comments there and to get that signed. There's no reason to get that signed and sent over to you.
I got it. Thank you very much.
No problem. Any other questions? Nobody has any other questions about this?
Yeah, I
No.
had a quick question.
Yes.
Oh, you can go ahead if you want. Oh, awesome.
Yes, I'm here. Okay.
Right, when you're calling these landlords, what if these properties are listed with a realtor or a management company? Can you still work with those?
Yeah, what you're going to have with management companies is a little different because you have to get hold of the landlord, and they're going to tell you that the landlord doesn't want to do a rent to buy. So it's going to be a little different. The way to deal with the property management companies is to have a relationship with them, where you're sending them, you know, when you have rent to buy people, you can send them renters as well. And what you can have is properties that they have, where they have out of town landlords, or they have landlords who, you know, don't think they can sell the property, because property management companies will usually have a very small part of their business come from listing homes, listing properties. That may change depending on the area, but you want to have a relationship with them where they'll send you lease option homes. But if it's listed with a landlord, I'm sorry, if it's listed with a realtor, realtors normally, if you guys look in the MLS, there's a lease option section in the MLS, but it's not used very often. Depending on the area, it's less than 5% of homes, lease option homes, are actually sold through lease option. The reason that is, excuse me, is because realtors don't see a way that they can make money with a lease option, because most of the time they're going to have to wait to get their commission until it gets refinanced. So they don't have much incentive to market the property. So when you do deal with a realtor or you deal with a listed property, you want to ask the realtor what the situation is with the seller. You want to get in touch with the seller. Now, realtors are obligated, and most property management companies are too, to present the offer to the seller. So if you have resistance, it's not going to be very easy to get through that process. So when you talk to a property manager, if you're talking to a property manager, I'll talk more about that when we talk about realtors and lenders, but you want to build more of a relationship with them. But you can still work with them as long as you can get in touch with the owner. The way to find that out is to simply ask them, you know, can I get in touch with the owner? If I send you some paperwork, can you show it to the owner? I want to find them a rent to buy tenant. And if I do that, what kind of cut could you and I work out? Now, if it's a property manager, you'd be willing to give them half the down payment because they've got several other properties. So if the property manager, you give them half the down payment, that's the maximum you want to do, give them half the down payment, and because you can make up for it in quantity. And if it's a realtor, you want to first talk to the realtor and then tell them you're sending them over an offer to lease option the property out and see if you know if you can buy it from them on a, you know, subject to a land contract, depending on the situation, which the realtor will be more aware of, how desperate they are, and if the realtor's waiting on a paycheck. So you can still work with them that way. Does that make sense? Hello?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you got a few more hoops to jump through.
Well, with the property, the quick answer, I guess, to your question is the property manager, no problem. You just tell him you're going to split the down. You can go up to a split in the down payment. So you just ask him, I want to find a rent-to-buy tenant for your property, for the owner. Is that something they'd be interested in? And we could work out a split where it makes sense for you too.
Right.
And then you're going to find out immediately two things. Number one, if they're going to work with you. And number two, if they're gonna work with you as far as getting you in touch with the owner. Number two, if they will take a down payment, if they want to split the down payment, if that'll make sense. because a property management company can have, and if you talk to one, they've got 20, 30 properties that they'll do a lease option with. Now immediately you can go and, you know, it makes sense to give them half the down payment for all that, because they're doing all, they're showing the property, they're, you know, they're going to be doing a lot of the work.
Right.
And then with the realtor, it's, it depends on the situation, which I'll get it more into with, I think it's tomorrow or day after that, we'll get more into that. But the realtor is going to have to, you want to ask them, you know, if they're going to have to present the offer to the seller, but you're not going to be buying the property either. You're going to be doing a rent to buy. And so you'd have to work out an equal cut with the realtor. So you could still do it, you're just going to make less of a cut, but you want to explain you're doing that for the relationship. Is that a clear answer?
Yeah, I mean, it's about what I expected. In the past, what little dealings I've had with the realtors is they're, if you don't have a cash offer, they don't want to talk to you.
Yeah, that's normally going to happen. That's why a lot of the properties that are for lease option, they're not going to, if that's already, they would only be in the paper if they're already doing a rent to buy or a rent or a lease option or, you know, some sort of, you know, financed or terms deal. So if it's a listed property, it's a little different. We'll talk about that later. But if you, this is just the for rent ads. So if it's a realtor listing a for rent, they've already agreed to do a for rent on some level.
Right.
So does that answer your question for now?
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Great. Great. Any other questions? No other questions? No questions at all. Okay. Okay, well, that is the that's the end of the week five. By the way, you guys have the week four audio. I'll get this uploaded to the site and send out an email to everybody about the week five. And then tomorrow will be two calls at 4 and 7 p.m., again, Eastern Standard Time, and we'll do the week six and week seven. And then, by the way, the table of contents for all this is at zerodowncashcow.com/12weeks.html. I'll send you that link as well. You can look at what's coming up and what we'll be going over there. So that's it. No other questions last time? No questions? Okay. Well, I'll see you. For those of you that can't make it at 3 and 7, great. If you can't, no problem. Send me in the question you want me to answer the call. I'll answer it on the call, and we'll go from there. Okay, guys. I will talk to you guys soon. Take care.
Okay.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks, Adam. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.